We've entitled this series, The King Lives, and it is a continuation of the series we went through last spring through 1 Samuel, which we titled Long Live the King. That was a phrase prayed over kings, and David needed that prayer in 1 Samuel as his life was constantly in jeopardy from Saul. And now that we are in 2 Samuel, David has come into his kingdom, he has come to his throne, and that means, among other things, victory over Israel's enemies, those enemies that posed existential threats, not just to the people of Israel, but to the purposes of God that were intended to be carried out through the people of Israel. And David understands that his role is not just a national king to fight political and military and foreign enemies, but is to advance the purposes of God. We live in a world fraught with the same sorts of challenges that David faced. 2 Samuel 8 gives a list of the enemies that David fought: Moab and Edom, the Ammonites, and of course, the ever-present Philistines. And chapter 8 indicates that David finally accomplished the victory over the Philistines during his reign that Israel had long awaited for, that gave them peace and security, that David was able to work what no other ruler in half a millennium had been able to work, and finally established Israel's peace and security from the border of Egypt all the way to the Euphrates River, the territory that God had promised Abraham would be his descendants. And David has accomplished a great deal, according to 2 Samuel 8. And the verse I read for the kids earlier is that God was the one that gave David victory everywhere he went. It's a foretaste of what Jesus will one day bring. And so as we hear in the news about, and this last week and a half has seemed like an intense ramp up of international threats. And so whether it's Iran or North Korea or Venezuela or China or Yemen, Russia, the Ukraine, whatever it is that we hear about, those challenges should remind us that we long for the day when all of that will be enveloped under God's shalom through the Lion of Judah, Jesus, the descendant of David. And so we anticipate that. And so as we look at David's life, we're not just looking at it as a historical curiosity. We're not just looking at David as a model to follow. We've already seen that he's not always that great of a model. And buckle up, the next three Sundays, 11 chapters of 2 Samuel leave us with very little to be encouraged by in David's story. This morning is the high point. It's going to get bumpy the next few Sundays. But before we get there, all of these victories of David are summed up with this statement in 2 Samuel 8:15, that David reigned over all Israel, and David administered justice and equity to all his people. When we think about victory, when we think about winning, we almost by default think of us and them. There's us and there are our enemies. And we want to promote our well-being, and we're not terribly interested how it turns out for our enemies so long as they are no longer a threat to us. And it is David's descendant, Jesus, that challenges us, and there's just no way to get around what Jesus said. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. He's not quoting scripture, but he is certainly appealing to, among other things, the reign of David, that Israel's rulers were expected to carry out wars against Israel's enemies. And so while not a direct quote of scripture, it's the paradigm that the Israelites have lived with for centuries. There's us, the Israelites, the people of God, and there's everybody else. And God will fight our battles and make sure that we are victorious over our enemies. And then Jesus says, but I tell you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He sends his rain on the just and the unjust. He causes his sun to shine on the righteous and on the wicked. And we might think, well, that's a revolutionary thing that Jesus introduced that was foreign to David's rule. But it says, David reigned over all Israel and established justice and equity to all his people. And the very next chapter gives us an instance of a case where David did that. And so 2 Samuel chapter 9, I encourage you to turn there, begins this way. David has been established in his kingdom. Peace and security has been obtained on every side. He has triumphed over enemies foreign. But we also know that David had enemies domestic. Not all Israel was thrilled to see the son of Jesse on the throne. And David says this, "Is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" David initiates a quest to do good to the house of his most bitter enemy. He says, "I need to establish equity and justice for everyone in Israel, including those who once sought my life." And so the text tells us in verse 2, "There was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David. And the king said to him, 'Are you Ziba?' He said, 'I am your servant.' And the king said, 'Is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him?' Ziba said to the king, 'There is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet.' The king said to him, 'Where is he?' And Ziba said to the king, 'He is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lo Debar.' Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lo Debar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, 'Mephibosheth.' And he answered, 'Behold, I am your servant.' And David said to him, 'Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan.'" David seeks out this individual who would not expect, and it's clear did not expect, anything good to come from the hand of David. As a member of the house of the vanquished king, the discredited king, the disgraced king, Mephibosheth expects nothing but wrath. In fact, the best thing that he could possibly hope for from David would be to not be paid attention to. That would be the best outcome in that context. And so when he is summoned at great distance by David, he is expecting only one thing, and that is to find his head separated from his body and put on display, so that all Israel will know that David has triumphed over all of his enemies, every last one. But David doesn't see his rule functioning in that way. He understands that he has been called to be king over all Israel, everyone. And we have sung this morning that Jesus fulfills that, because Jesus is not just the king of a particular people. Over and over, Scripture says, we read it in Micah, we sang of it, Revelation echoes it, every tribe, every nation, every tongue, and we must be careful how we live in the world that we reflect that. I read a heartbreaking survey this week, and I don't remember the exact percentage, but it was substantial, of American evangelicals are uncomfortable when people are speaking other languages around them. And someone wittily commented, "Heaven's going to be really awkward for them." We have to be careful how we live in this world, that in the midst of the very real dangers and challenges of a fallen world, that what animates us is not fear, but hope. Hope of the day when we are all gathered before the throne, and where we would expect nothing but the fate due to traitors and rebels, that we will find kindness. Now, that kindness takes a particular shape, and so I want to look back at that verse in 2 Samuel 8 for a moment, because among other things, it says that David administered his reign to all Israel without exception. Everyone is receiving the benefits of David's reign, and those benefits are expressed as justice and equity. Now, that's a phrase that carries a lot of freight in the Old Testament. Justice and equity. We're familiar with the concept of justice, but we usually think of justice in purely negative terms. You violate the law and a consequence comes due you, and we feel like justice has been served. and that that is what justice means. That is one component of justice. Biblically speaking, particularly when the prophets speak of the responsibility of those ruling God's people to administer justice, they often pair it with equity, and they often use phrases like pleading the case of the orphan and the widow, advocating for the sojourner, the resident foreigner in your midst. Those categories do not often mean to us what they meant to ancient people. These were people who were on the outside of the systems of power, who did not have advantage, who did not have opportunity, who could not avail themselves of the systems of justice the way that others could. Men who owned land, passed down to them from their fathers, native-born Israelites. And the kings of Israel are exhorted by the law and the prophets to administer justice and equity, not just to punish wrongdoing, but to advance the cause of people who had been disadvantaged by society and the system. We have an inadequate view of justice oftentimes because we only think of it in its negative context. We do not think of it in that positive context of promoting equity, ensuring that everyone flourishes and experiences God's shalom, God's peace, the wholeness of thriving in the way that God intended for the creation to, under the righteous and just rule of God's image bearers. And so what David does for Mephibosheth is not just negative in concept. David does not just call Mephibosheth before him and say, "Don't worry, I'm not going to kill you." David does something remarkable. And so continuing in chapter 9, he says, "I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father." David restores to Mephibosheth the rights of a firstborn. Mephibosheth, not just as one who is on the outside politically due to David's victory and rising to the throne, but also as one crippled, would have been viewed as an outcast. Even as a royal person, he would have not expected to be the heir due to his physical disability. David says, "I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always." Mephibosheth becomes a member of David's household and court. This is provision. And he, Mephibosheth, paid homage and said, "What is your servant that you show regard for a dead dog such as I?" Mephibosheth understands what he would have rightly expected, the fate due a dead dog. And he marvels at David's actions. And then David calls this servant Ziba, and we're going to interact with these two in a few weeks. They come back up in David's story again. But essentially makes Ziba the steward over all of Saul's former estates, and the proceeds of those estates are going to come to Mephibosheth. So he's going to live in David's house and eat from David's own table, as well as receiving the proceeds from the land that Saul's family had owned and that David had claimed upon coming to the throne. Again, rightly so. And so verse 11 says that Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And verse 13, so Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. This is repeated over and over again. And we are reminded that he was lame in both his feet. Nothing about Mephibosheth suggests that he would have expected this. No one in the ancient world would have expected David to do this. The word kindness is used three times of what David is trying to demonstrate, to show to Saul's house through the person of Mephibosheth. The Hebrew word is one that we talk about a lot here. It's chesed, and there's no way to get that sound in English, so I know this looks like chest. That's not the word. This has nothing to do with the ancient board game. It is David's chesed. It is a word that defies translation. It is a commitment to do good to someone for no other reason than that it pleases you, and so you've promised to. It is used most frequently of God. David here says he wants to show God's chesed, his kindness, to the house of Saul. David doesn't regard this as something he's doing on his own. He is mediating God's kindness, God's covenant loyalty to Saul's house. And there's three things about this chesed that I want us to understand. The first is that it is risky. Mephibosheth is the heir, the only heir that we know of at this point, to David's former rival. Keeping that person alive, bringing them into the halls of power, giving them land that belonged to the former king, restoring that house is an incredibly risky move. It is politically naive. And one wonders, where is Joab? If Joab were around, and maybe he's out on a mission, he surely would have argued against this. We know from his other interactions with members of Saul's household, Joab would say, there's no Saul-eyed but a good dead Saul-eyed. That's Joab's advice to his uncle. David doesn't heed it here. It's risky what David does. The second thing that it is it's costly. David parts ways with one of the bases of a king's power in the ancient world, which is land. He also extravagantly brings this person into his household and provides lavishly for him, elevates him to the position of one of his own sons. It's a costly kindness that David exhibits. But more than anything else, it is unnecessary and unprompted. David receives nothing from this. It doesn't present itself to him. He goes out looking for this opportunity. Where Mephibosheth is living is across the Jordan River to the north of the country. There's no social media. He doesn't know Mephibosheth exists. He hadn't been around Jonathan to know if Jonathan even had any other sons. It could have been one of Saul's other sons' children that David ended up finding. It is unprompted and unnecessary. And if this description of kindness sounds familiar, it should. It is the kindness that God shows to us. It is a risky kindness. We are not to be trusted with grace. We know this. It is costly. He sends his own son to extend grace to us. And it is unnecessary and unprompted. We stand as Mephibosheth before the King of the universe and should ask the same question, what is this that you are doing for me, bringing me into your house? So now what? What do we do with this? Well, earlier I referred to you all as Bereans, mighty men and women. We are called to exhibit this same kind of strength. Strength that is not just meant to defeat foes, but to build up those who find themselves not experiencing God's shalom. And Berean has a legacy of doing that. For the last couple of years, we have invited our community to join together with us, to gather together with us, because we seek to be a blessing on Thursday nights. And this is just a sampling. I'm convinced that I left some names off. It is not intentional. Of people who have been helping on Thursday nights. And it has put us in contact with our neighbors and has presented us with opportunities to be blessed and to be a blessing, to bring members of our neighborhood into our household, members of our communities into our church family. And so I'm deeply grateful for those mighty men and women of Berean who have devoted themselves to this task. And the opportunities have multiplied that have been presented to us. And so as we mentioned last week, next year we are shifting our ministry activities to Wednesday evenings because Thursday afternoons have presented themselves as powerful opportunities for partnership. One of those is with Young Life, an organization that works with middle school students at Riverside Middle School, and they use our space on Thursday afternoons to work with those teens. And the report from Riverside's administration and teachers is that there's been a profound transformation and change in the lives of those particular students who have been participating in that program. You all have helped to make that possible. On Mondays and Tuesdays, actually Tuesdays, we've been hosting a Youth for Christ ministry that's brand new called Deaf Teen Quest. And they've also been using our space on Tuesday evenings. And I was at a breakfast for Youth for Christ a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't quite understand what we had put our hands to. Molly Leary had brought this opportunity to us because she's involved with this ministry. And we said, sure, you can use the space. And I was stunned that with hundreds of pastors and ministry leaders and church members from across West Michigan gathered, they were talking about this ministry that we are hosting. It's brand new, but it is yielding profound results and doing amazing things in the lives of these teens. You've made that possible. We continue to partner with Urban Transformation Ministries, Saturday mornings and Wednesday evenings, with their basketball clinics impacting the lives of young men. We continue to see them use the house we used to own that we gifted in order that they might have the Man Up house. You've made that possible. But one of the most profound partnership opportunities we have is something we are directly involved in, and I'm gonna ask Annie Beamers if she would come and share with us what the last 6 weeks have looked like as we've partnered with New City Neighbors with an after-school program. Annie.
Thank you. Well, last time I stood up here, it was December, and we were just announcing our partnership with New City Neighbors in this after-school program, and we had really no idea what exactly that would look like. I didn't know if anybody from Berean would step up and volunteer. I didn't know if any families from Palmer would really be interested in a program one day a week. And really, it's been amazing to see God at work, because as soon as the service ended that day, Becky Kerr came up to me and said, you know, that's my only day that I don't have children to take care of, and I would love to volunteer. And several of you came up to me and said, this program is so exciting, I'm praying for it, and I can't wait to see what God has in store. And so the last 6 weeks, we've been partnering with these beautiful kids up here who are all part of God's kingdom and part of our community. And it's just been a blessing to see God at work through that. We had two high school students, Keon and Kalasia, helping us. Keon is actually part of Urban Transformation Ministries. He plays basketball here weekly. And Kalasia attends Coit Community Church and has a good relationship with Pastor Jerome there. So they're already connected to our community. And believe it or not, they are freshmen in high school. And we hope to be able to continue to feed into them for the next 4 years. And then we had 9 students coming regularly, all from our Palmer community. And so it's really been a blessing to see that at work. It was not perfect. We had several hiccups along the way, but the reason we did this pilot program is to work through things so that as we look towards the fall, we're more well prepared to serve. And I really want to thank several people that came regularly to volunteer. Most of their names, I believe, are on here, but Bob Pache drove the van for us. You'd think driving 5 minutes to Palmer School wouldn't be a big deal, but just in that short amount of time, he was able to build a little bit of relationship with the kids, and it was a huge help to me as it was one less thing I had to think about. Val Gordon and Becky Kerr graciously gave their time almost every Thursday to tutor one-on-one. Gary Courtright led our Bible time, and we were really able to have some good discussion about the Good Samaritan through that. Wendy Courtright, Judy Gill, the Tainters were here to help volunteer as well, and Judy Wasnick provided a lot of input on the craft, which is not something I'm gifted in, and so I'm really thankful for her help as well. So thank you to each of you for praying for us. We really had a great time and are looking forward to the fall as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Annie. And so for us, as we continue to reflect on what we do with this, we want to be a church, you know our vision statement, that is growing, that is partnering with others to serve our city and to multiply gospel ministry. And we're seeing that vision come to fruition. And so we are excited for what God has next as we have placed ourselves in a position to interact with our community, to discern what is it that we can do together. We are excited to see where that is going. And so when we have our business meeting on June 9th, you'll see that we are asking for an approval of a budget that includes an expanded line item for New City Neighbors so that we can continue to have an after-school program the entire year next year. We want to continue to see that grow as well as see where God would have us go with these other partnerships. So as we continue in worship, I want you to be asking yourself the questions, what strengths have I been given? And how do I need to then give those strengths into service? And that may be through things here, it may be through things as you've got your dots on the map in the spheres of influence that you have. But we want to be like David in looking for who can I show God's chesed to? without exception, without distinction. Would you join me in prayer as we continue in worship? God, who is a God of kindness, a God of mercy and grace, an extravagant love that is poured out, heaped upon us without measure. Jesus described it as a good measure, shaken together, pressed down, and overflowing. God, we want to know deep within ourselves the depths of your love for us, that we might then say, who can we show this same love to? We want to be the vessels of the death and resurrection of Jesus, so that every tribe and tongue and nation, both in our city, our neighborhood, our region, our nation, and our world, would gather before the throne, because you are worthy because of your love and mercy. So we ask that you would so transform us, and we ask it because of Jesus, the Lion of Judah. Amen.